Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Saubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
With Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn it into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this Thursday morning for Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. I'm Naima Latif, your co-host, and we'll be joined by Dr. Debbie Green, who will give us some insight about anxiety. Have you ever felt so overwhelmed that you thought you would pass out? Has your body ever given you feelings of anxiety such as panic attacks? Millions of people suffer from anxiety daily and struggle with the symptoms. Anxiety is one of the leading causes of mental illness. Well, join us as Dr. Debbie Green at Soulful Solutions comes to discuss this important topic. Many times we are struggling with feelings of anxiety because of our fear of what may happen. And it's important to realize that what we are usually upset about is something that has not happened. It's the fear of the future that we've created in our own minds. in our own imaginations. So we are actually experiencing the thing that we fear is going to happen as if it is happening. And this is what causes anxiety. Being able to master one's thoughts, one's minds, one's projections into the future, it really takes practice. But if one has had experiences that have been, in fact, distressing, destructive, painful, making one feel helpless to avoid such experiences in the future, well, this could create that state of anxiety. Certain things are traumatic, and many times we are responding to the memory of a traumatic experience, and we're living in fear that that traumatic experience may happen again. This will most definitely create anxiety. So reliving a trauma is one of the things that makes it difficult for us to heal from the trauma, and it's what produces eventually that state of mental illness. Our mind is ill because we are in a state of distress over that which we fear may happen again. Or maybe it has never happened, but we fear it might happen because we've experienced or perhaps witnessed it happening to someone else. And we fear how it's going to make us feel if it happens to us. So the anxiety that we live with is basically a condition created in our own minds. And our minds are very powerful. There's nothing more powerful than the imagination. So when our imagination creates a condition that doesn't exist, but a condition of which we fear and dread, then we're going to be in a state of anxiety. This is why people worry about bills. What happens if I don't have enough money to pay my bills? And then perhaps they envision what it may be feel like to be homeless. They envision what the experience may feel like to be publicly humiliated with being kicked out of the house, having one's things thrown out in the street. And if that happens to be an experience one has had perhaps in earlier life, in childhood, or whatever the case may be, then the memory of that will create anxiety that that experience will be repeated. If one has been assaulted at a point in one's life, maybe that feeling of helplessness as one's body was being violated, the distress of that, well, the fear of that reoccurrence can definitely create a state of anxiety. An emotional trauma that has not been addressed and leaves one feeling vulnerable to attack can become a regular state of mind and will lead to mental illness. So it's important to know what is the source of the anxiety. What is the source of the fear? What is the belief in what is going to happen that keeps us reliving it as if it is happening and creating that anxiety? The very common anxiety of not knowing what's going to happen if one doesn't have enough money to pay one's bills. One can envision everything from the lights being turned out and then food spoiling in the refrigerator and having nothing to eat and the feeling of hunger. And if that has been a real experience in one's life, then the anxiety is the fear that it will reoccur. And all of those upsetting feelings will be re-experienced. The more trauma, the more memories of bad feelings, the more memories of pain and suffering that we have, the more likely we are to be triggered into an anxiety attack because we know what it is we fear because we have experienced it. And we don't want to experience it again. If we're worried constantly about illness, maybe we've had the experience of illness and what it's like not to be able to take care of oneself, not to be able to bathe oneself, to have soiled oneself, to not have people to sympathize and empathize and take care of oneself. We may fear being bedridden or not being able to simply get up to go to the bathroom. We're so ill. Or we may fear pain if we have experienced pain. We fear what's going to happen if we are in pain. And then there are people who fear death. And whatever your concept is of what will happen after your body is no longer able to house your life force energy, that fear can create extreme anxiety about death. And generally, it's the belief of suffering before death occurs that one fears. The fear of intense, unbearable pain. That is what causes anxiety about death. And then there's also the fear of what happens after you leave this vessel. And depending on what one's beliefs may be, whatever one's spiritual beliefs may be, if you're believing that you're going to suffer hell and damnation and condemnation and shame and guilt, then you're going to fear death. You feel, I don't want to die yet because I don't have myself together. I don't have my life perfect yet. God will be angry with me because of what I've done, and I haven't fixed the problem yet. So all of these things can make a person have great anxiety about death, or even the fear that one's loved ones will not be taken care of if one is absent. If you have young children and you know they need you and you're afraid that if you die that they'll be mistreated or abandoned or homeless or suffering or abused, then that can cause anxiety about death. So we live constantly fearing that which has not happened, but that which we are imagining has happened or will happen, and then we're imagining how we'll feel when it happens, and so we're experiencing anxiety and anticipation of that feeling that we fear we will experience. That creates anxiety. How do we go about overcoming anxiety? Just as we project onto the future the worst situation and then we suffer with that fear that it's going to happen, we can train our minds to project into the future the best situation and feel the feelings of that happening instead. What we are not taught is that we create our future. And if we put our attention on the very thing we don't want to happen, we will actually create it. First, we will feel the effects of it, and then we actually draw it to us. Fear of not having enough money creates a panic. People who make bad decisions in which they choose to do something illegal in order to get money, it's based on the fear of what will happen if they don't have money. What do they fear they will suffer if they don't have the money they're willing to steal for in order to get? Are they fearing homelessness? Are they fearing lights getting cut out? Are they fearing having to walk a long distance because they don't have a vehicle? Are they fearing not having enough money for bus fare or an Uber or a cab? Are they fearing suffering in bad weather? Are they fearing public ridicule? What are they fearing that makes them make a decision to do something that damages the rest of their lives? It's all based on fear. False evidence appearing real. Believing that if you don't do something, then something that's going to cause you extreme pain, whether physical or emotional, will happen. What moves a person to suicide? Again, it starts with the anxiety, the fear that something is going to happen that they cannot bear. And often it is a fear of emotional distress, fear of the feelings that happen when one is publicly humiliated, publicly shamed, publicly rejected, loss of love, the pain of that, the emotional pain of it. People in their lives, rather than face an emotional pain they envision they're going to experience because of whatever condition they believe they exist in. Whatever they believe is going to happen, they believe it's going to cause them more emotional pain than they are willing to bear. And so they end their lives, or they attempt to end their lives, and some suicides are unsuccessful. Taking one's life is perhaps precipitated by the memory of something that was so horrific, the memory of either a rejection, an abuse, a situation that was so traumatic that the idea of reliving that is simply too much to bear. So a person believes they'd rather simply disappear and have no consciousness existing at all. And so that's what they initiate when they commit suicide. They're believing that they will just dissolve into nothingness. Of course, that doesn't happen. And we have the benefit of many near-death experiencers that can tell us that you don't get out of anything when you commit suicide. If you need to experience something as a soul to help you in your evolution, taking your life will not get you out of it. It's something that you must face and overcome. Life is a series of challenges to overcome. But as a word of comfort for those who fear that their loved ones who may have committed suicide are somewhere suffering in some type of hell, no, they are not. They are not. It's understood that they were overwhelmed. It's understood that they simply had to step away from the earth experience, and their soul needs healing. But when they left, they missed the opportunity for growth, and so they have to come back, and they have to face the thing that made them check out early, because they have to master it. That is understood when we get to the other side. But because we don't know this, we're not taught this, we're not experiencing this, we only know the fear that we have of the overwhelming pain we're going to have if we face the thing we are avoiding, then we choose to avoid it by suicide. Anxiety is always created by our imaginations in giving us a vision of the thing we fear is going to happen. How does one learn how to overcome anxiety? The first thing is to face one's fear. And Dr. Debbie is here to explain to us how to do that. Grand Rising, Dr. Debbie Green.
Good morning, Grand Rising, everyone. Beautiful day here in Atlanta. A little overcast and chilly, but I know I can't talk like that because I know Chi-Town is cold.
It's cold. Yes, it is. Cold weather today.
Chilly. Oh, you know what? It's so refreshing, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's refreshing.
Yes.
Because it's like it kills all the germs.
Yes, that's a good thing. Cold weather kills germs. I mean, you know, if you can think back to that hot day when you sweat and you're like, oh, I've got to get some cool air. Well, now you got it.
That's right. That's right. Wow. Well, welcome, welcome, everybody, to Soulful Solutions. I am Dr. Debbie Green. And actually, we have a really great topic that most people love to talk about, and that thing is called fear. Mm-hmm. But I had previous shows, Naima, about fear, but what I wanted to share is just some how can I say this? Fear is starting to affect far as on the side of when they call mental illness. It's starting to change just from your basic generalized anxiety to other physical symptoms. And I found a case that was very interesting. I wanted to share with everyone because someone could possibly be going through this out there. And I wanted to give some, you know, good guidance as well as preventional tips. If they are, the first thing I wanted to talk about is fear, because fear is false evidence appearing real. That's really what it is. So that being said, it causes us to actually feel imminent threat on some of the least or the most types of situations or circumstances. Someone can scream at you. You can hear a loud sound, and it can put you back into an area of experience as far as PTSD is concerned. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so many ways you can be triggered through your senses. It's almost numerical. I mean, it's so many different ways. But yeah. We do know that fear comes through the senses such as taste, sound, you know, sight, touch. And we also have another senses that is just occurs inside the brain, but not with the sensory organs, our six senses, because that's what we're supposed to have. We have six senses,
yes,
but we really have seven.
Yes.
It's really seven. Yes. And seven is where the emotional regulator actually looks, where it responds. It responds off of circuitry of past, present, and future.
Mm.
So it's an automatic thing. It's not something that we can control, but it's also like it sits like an atmosphere sense, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you sense that I'm in this scary place, but really and truly it's not scary. You just sense it.
Yeah.
It's based upon something that you felt before, and the brain just comes back and actually regenerates that same thought from past issues that you've experienced before. So everything I'm talking about is virtual. Everything is virtual, which means it occurs in the brain, not outside the brain. So one of these things I want to talk about is how the body responds, and what we've been discovering just recently, and I'm sure this has been going on for some time, but I have a patient that she is, and she's a 15-year-old female, and when she experiences fear of any kind, it could be anything from feeling disappointed to feeling someone might have said something in her in a tone, pitch, or volume, or, you know, anything of that nature. Her response is based upon what people say. She gets triggered by what people say to her in tone, pitches, and value. Like, they could say, oh, you're a bad person, you know, and if they say it in a certain tone, pitch, and value, that alerts her senses, and then she goes into what they call fear mode. Fear mode, she starts to feel heated first. Her heart starts to, she starts experiencing tachycardia, and then she totally passes out.
Oh, my.
Literally.
Oh, faint. My.
Yes. Now, this is something new, because we've had her before, and what her parents were saying, this is something new. She wasn't doing this before. And they thought it was medically, you know, related. So they had her tested, and everything was fine. But again, you know, anytime she feels overwhelmed by someone's words or their actions, she faints.
Have they known known about any experience of abuse or assault that she may have had in her life that she's repressing the memory of, or a trauma that she's repressing that, you know, her subconscious mind is protecting her from whenever she feels that anxiety?
Right, right. There is a past history of trauma.
Mm.
It's from her mother's addiction.
Mm.
Yes, and her mother was addicted to alcohol, and there was definitely some major changes in the family due to that. And she was, like, at her earliest ages, like, between, you know, 5 and 8. Her mother now is no longer not addicted, but the past history of it has affected her. So now she's really trying to heal.
Mm.
She's trying to heal. So that being said, I was just really working closely with this family and giving, you know, really focusing on keeping her safe, because she's when you have that symptoms of where you, when you get overwhelmed, you faint, you could be anywhere, you know, and so they were really monitoring her with this. So I had her to start, when she starts feeling that way, to use a essence oil, a eucalyptus, a peppermint, you know, something to alert the senses and redirect them, you know, because, you know, the brain can only operate on one thing at a time. We are multitaskable, but the brain itself can start many things, but it can only finish one. So
that's good to know.
When,
are you multitaskers?
Multitaskers, oh, yeah. Like, I don't care who you are. No one can finish it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
It happens in sequence, because the brain... And again, you'll feel very, very overwhelmed, like a person ADD. It's very hard for them to focus on you know, they can start a whole lot of things, but they feel totally overwhelmed, and then they go into an anxiety attack. That's
wow.
Yeah.
Why are you talking about me, Dr. Debbie?
Yeah, because you the brain's like, okay, which one of these you want me to finish?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I can't go, oh my God, overwhelmed.
Yeah. and it's not, and, you know, that's who we are. We are multitasking people.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is to, okay, what to focus on first. So that being said, the situation that I was referring to, I had to slow her mind down. I had to let her know, okay,
wow,
wait a minute. Let's slow it down. You're fast. You're too fast for your own thoughts. You know, because consciously, eyes wide open, we make a choice to see something as uncomfortable or comfortable. That's it. It's a choice. That's all it is. Fear is just a choice, guys. It's not what you think it is.
Wow.
Something is a choice. It occurs in the mind. It doesn't have anything to do with the outside.
Mm.
Nothing. It really doesn't. So, if you know, when we're experiencing fear, we are associating it with something else that we experienced that made us feel uncomfortable. It's all association.
Mm.
So, I broke it down in little sequences. I said, okay, let's go through this. When you first hear, then you start to feel. Because hearing, when first there's a thought, then there's a feeling. No, the feeling doesn't come first. Most people think the feeling comes first,
thought.
But it does not.
The thought creates the feeling. Yeah.
But it's a 45-second delay.
Ah.
But you're not paying attention because you all in your what?
Feeling. Yes.
But the thought comes first. The thought comes first, then there's a delay. The delay is 45 seconds before that feeling is executed. Now you are feeling whatever that is. If you determine it's going to be a pain, if you have determined that you are, you know, uncomfortable, if you, whatever, your perception of the thing is going to influence your thought.
Wow. So in that 45 seconds, if you can make a habit of changing the thought before you get the bad feeling, then you can avoid the anxiety.
Absolutely. There you go.
Mm.
But you got to do it quickly.
Got to do it quick.
Yeah, because if you don't do it quickly, what happens is you got this, the subconscious will override the conscious.
Wow.
That's what happens. That's what people start to experience real severe generalized anxiety, because the subconscious is overriding the conscious. And so they have to go and get medication to slow the drip, which is the adrenaline, and to release these dopamine, serotonin, these good feeling hormones, so that they don't feel all tense, you know, nervousness. It calms down the body. But it holistically, you can calm the body down by how you approach and how you view things. If I can give you an example, let's say you're walking down this pathway, and it's in the woods, you know, and you're just looking around, everything is beautiful, and you do this every day. You know, every day you walk down this pathway, right? So one day you walk down that pathway, and then there's a bear that jumps out at you. And immediately you are in fear of the bear, because guess what? In your mind, a bear is scary.
Yeah.
A bear is scary to anybody.
Right.
Not realizing the bear is just as scared as you are. Okay.
Yeah. What are you doing here, person?
So you immediately run back the other way, you know, in terror or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So now your normal walking in the woods is no more normal anymore.
Because you're always anticipating the bear.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you think your perception is still in that past event, which is going to interrupt your peaceful walk. Now, the bear doesn't have to jump out. And if you're brave and if you want to take a chance, which I would hope you would do, well, I'm just going to walk anyway. Okay? I'm going to walk anyway, and you'll find out that that may not happen again. And even if it does, well, you did the same thing you did before. You just
run.
So, another, you know, a lot of times fear would then take our joy. That's really what I'm trying to say.
Fear
would
take
our joy and our peace based upon a past event that we've already experienced. You know what I'm saying? And that's another word for that is PTSD. You know, another, you know, traumatic stress syndrome.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome is a real thing. I do not undermine that. I do not minimize the discomfort of that, because again, the body keeps the score. Okay. It keeps every cell in our body as a memory. You know, every neuron in our brain keeps a memory of this thing. We can go back to that day like it happened yesterday, but at the same token, you know what I'm saying, we still have to live. We have to live.
Yeah.
So, you know, and, you know, be proactive. Be proactive with your living, you know, and not allow the fear to oversee you. And for those who do have ADHD, if that is a part of it, like when we start all these great projects and things of that nature. You know, there's a area that's called the power pause. All right, this is a great strategy technique anybody can use. A power up pause. That means you have the power to pause at any given moment in time.
Before you go into a reaction mode.
Well, because the subconscious is going to react. Yeah. It's going to react regardless of what you want to do.
Wow. Well, we got to take a break, but when we come back, I want to ask about some triggers that cause people to go into anxiety mode, maybe because of something they may have experienced in the past. And when it looks like it's about to happen again, you react as if it is happening because of fear and memory of when it did happen. So,
right.
Well, we'll be right back after this quick break, so we want you all to stick and stay. Don't stray away. Come on back. And if you're watching us or would like to watch us on Facebook, just go to Soulful Solutions on Facebook, and you will see the beautiful face of Dr. Debbie, and you'll see my big smile.
Beautiful face, but not you.
We'll be right back. Just a moment, so stay with us.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of our cells, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 community. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
Debbie Green, with my wonderful co-host, Naima Latif, our executive producer of The Female Solution. So you were asking me before we went to break that you wanted to know the trigger.
Yes, and one thing that I observed, and I was really, really trying to sort of initiate a campaign to stop firecrackers. I have observed people who have had loved ones shot and seeing
right.
a response during that time when people are setting off firecrackers.
Yes.
And I can see the PTSD. So it's not just veterans of war, it's people who've been veterans of street violence, urban violence, shooting that happens in your neighborhood. And if someone that you love has been killed, the sound of gunfire is a powerful trigger to an anxiety attack. But I'm sure there are a lot of other things that could be triggers to a traumatic memory. What are some of the things that you've observed that can cause people to, freak out?
Well, there's many things that can trigger the senses, because that's exactly how we experience triggers. They come through the sensory organs, which is through the eyes, the ears, touch, sound, of those types of things. Any loud sound can trigger that. Also, conversations. Conversations, if it's based upon some traumatic experience, like if someone was abused by their loved one or father or something like that, someone could be talking about a father. How father is reacting, it can cause a trigger there. And triggers usually occur, like I said, within that 45-second moment of time when it goes through the ear gate, eye gate, through the senses, and at that point, that person then becomes totally aware that, okay, my world just changed. And some of them, they get triggered so hard, they dissociate. And what that term, dissociate, Naima, is a medical condition where they literally go back in time and they zone out. They become really what we call catatonic.
Wow.
They're just staring in space, blinking their eyes very slowly. And you could be talking to them. And they can hear you, but they can't respond.
Ooh.
Or anywhere between, I would say, maybe one to 5 minutes. 5 minutes is the longest I've ever seen, but the shortest I've ever seen is like 1 to 3 minutes.
Mm.
And that's a long time to zone out.
That is a long time.
Yeah. And so during these times, you're really not supposed to touch them because it depends on where they are. Because if they're, for example, if someone was experiencing, being raped or whatever, so if you touch them, it'll just make it worse. So what I usually do to bring them back, we have always to the office smelling salts. And smelling salts is something... like what you do, you just put it underneath the nostrils again to alert the senses, the other sense to take over, to override the other sense. And because remember, the brain can only concentrate on one thing at a time. So you put that on there and they're like, whoa, you know, they'll smell it and they become alert. And then at that point, then you can start talking to them. Okay, it's okay. Everything's all right. You're safe. And then bring them out of it.
Wow.
It is real. And most people don't realize that fear, again, this is how the body reacts to fear, can change a person's world in a matter of a seconds, moment.
Wow. Yeah. I remember an associate was, we were all having a conversation. And then it was a group of us, and then a couple of us, me and another person started arguing. And she became very upset. And, and I was like, why are you telling me you argue all the time? But, what she had was a memory of growing up where people would start fighting violently. And so it's like we triggered that memory for her. And, she was just very agitated. And... I didn't understand it until she explained it later, that when she grew up and people started arguing, somebody pulls out a gun, somebody pulls out a knife, somebody gets hurt, and it's trauma, So for her, the sound of arguing was the precursor to the violence. And she was reacting to the memory of that and just was extremely distressed. So
right.
I would imagine anybody who's grown up in a home where there is domestic violence, certain things would be upsetting, such as maybe loud voices or arguments or anything that tends to happen before the violence in the home happens. So it would be very hard for somebody who grew up in a home where there's domestic abuse, I would think, to even be able to engage in normal, lively conversation because of what it would trigger in terms of a memory of inappropriate behavior, violent behavior after an argument.
Right. Fear is the only thing that can really and truly control a human being's mind and redirect them into something that they are not. Love, fear and love is two different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, fear is just the absence of love, and love is the absence of fear. So it's like when all of these experiences start to happen in our lives, it tends to, it changes our dynamics of how we think, it changes our provisions that we allow ourselves to do. It changes our perceptions, our views of life. It changes our goals. It changes how we raise our children. It changes everything, right? And I'm talking about excessive fear. Okay, for example, right now I and this probably is going to shift in subject, but I'm still talking about fear. I truly believe our children are being traumatized in school.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And our government, our city, our council, our county, or whatever, are not doing enough to protect our children.
Right.
They don't have any real, what they call, protective devices on the doors of the school, the surroundings of the school. And we've been watching this, like, God knows how long that anyone can walk in and on the schoolyard, inside the school, anywhere in the school.
Yeah, it just keeps happening.
To shoot and kill.
It just
people.
Keeps happening. And I would not, I'm so grateful I don't have a child in school.
Oh,
anymore.
If I did, I would let my child.
I'd be homeschooling. I would absolutely
homeschooling. Yeah, I would have to, some kind of way.
Because it's like you say, the government isn't protecting them. They don't.
No.
And you know, it's so stupid saying, well, you just make sure every teacher has a gun. That's so stupid. Because, you know, if I went to college to teach, I didn't go to college to be a marksman. You know, I'm trying to teach a class. Let somebody else handle the protection. But if you don't have a protective environment, how can you teach when children are going to school full of anxiety? You know, and then I can just imagine the schools where these tragedies have happened. A sound of a tire backfiring on the street could probably just trigger, you know, everybody hit the deck, you know, everybody's, you know, terrified and crying. And I mean, I can just imagine how disruptive every little sound that sounds like gunfire would be in a school that has experienced that tragedy.
I'm telling you, and people,
how can you teach in that environment?
They clean up the evidence and ask them to go right back into the building
didn't happen. Yeah.
I couldn't understand why they didn't knock those walls down. I understand that
it's insensitivity. They didn't realize you can't.
What?
You can't.
What was you thinking?
You know, wash up the blood and just say, "Oh, pretend it didn't happen." No.
No. What was you thinking?
They weren't.
I want to know that. There's no way if I could have been the mayor, the city council, or whoever, I would have knocked that whole, Sandy Hook, I would have knocked that whole building down and rebuilt a new one. They have no idea.
They don't understand.
The traumatic experiences those children are going to have that survived.
Yeah. That place
I guarantee
will always be a place.
The majority of them, if not all, will have great problems with anxiety and depression.
Yeah. Well, I think that
just for walking in the building, just walking on the premises.
So, is it that the government is disconnected from the mental health community where they just don't understand trauma? Because I can't imagine, and I'm sure. Yeah, children are very resilient. I mean, they survive. They'll be out playing in a war zone, but still, I mean. You're going to see signs of it show up, even though they might seem like they're okay, but you're going to see the signs of the trauma somewhere in their behavior. And most of the time, adults see behavior that's disruptive as disobedient, and so therefore they issue punishment instead of realizing when somebody is expressing anxiety as a result of a traumatic experience. How is it that adults are so disconnected that they can't see that? Why is that?
Because we are a society that never responds to be proactive, but only when things are in extreme.
Mm.
That's the truth. I guess I see it up close and personal, Naima, because I work at a mental health hospital, and I've been in the field for a long time, and the children from ages 12 to 17, you know, are just experiencing fear at the highest levels. I mean, they even have a conversation about just going back in school or in any school, even when there wasn't a shooting at that school. They still say the same thing. You just never know when someone is going to do something crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
So, and anytime you hear, you know, the sound of people's voices that, you know, sound agitated, that's going to, you know, put everybody on alert. I mean, and then what ends up happening when you have an environment like that, because everybody is on such high alert, then when someone does some little thing, there's an overreaction. I mean, I look at that little six-year-old that got put in handcuffs. I'm thinking, what was in the mind of that officer that would react that way to a six-year-old? Have they been traumatized by something? You know, because, I mean, we holler racism all the time, but I think when people overreact to that degree, it's something inside of them. Something happened inside of them where their judgment is off because they're responding to something else, not that situation. They're responding to something else that traumatized them. That's why they're not thinking clearly. That's why you would handcuff a six-year-old that's crying. What's the matter with you? You know, that's not like somebody that really should not have been on the force. They needed to get treatment for their PTSD. And I that's what I'm seeing in a lot of these police cases where people are then further traumatized.
Right.
So I had a friend back in college, and something had happened in him in his early life. He, I think, saw a family member get arrested, shot, or something like that. And, you know, we'd be walking down the street, and a police car would just drive past, and he would freak out and start hiding behind buildings and everything. He said, well, you just never know. And I couldn't understand that, of course, until later in life when I realized that what he had been through had traumatized him, and he could not even be in the presence of a police patrol car without a severe reaction. How many people are going through that because of things that have happened to them? And we just expect them to act like everything's okay.
Yes, exactly. And usually they don't see the effects of the trauma until years later. You don't see it immediately because, like you said, children are resilient, but you don't see the effects until they get in their latter stages. Like if it happened to them when they were 5 years old, depression and anxiety doesn't surface until they're probably 10, 12, and anything could trigger that, you know. Whenever anything, I mean, you get triggered by your senses, it takes you all the way back to that first traumatized issue. You see what I'm saying? And you start responding not from just that trigger, but all the other, you know, trauma. That's why trauma is such an overwhelming feeling, because the brain associates it, it connects the dots and pulls all the trauma to the forefront of the brain. It doesn't realize, oh, no, let's not deal with that trauma, that's too much. No, it doesn't rationalize. Your subconscious mind doesn't rationalize to know what is supposed to be and what's not supposed to be. It only gives, it's like a computer, it's a Google. Here comes the trigger, that's what you're looking for. And everything in that comes forward. That's the way it works. So what one must do is realize how the brain is working, first of all, and then immediately use that 45 seconds to shift into a place of safety. That's what I usually, when I help individuals to understand the workings of their brain when it comes to trauma, as well as anxiety and depression, you have a working center. That's the functional, executive function, temple to temple. It's the working center. That's where your mental flexibility is. That's where your sensory is alert. You know, if it's normal, if you have a normal sensory board. Now, if you've ever had strokes or any type of dementia or any other core-related medical conditions, it would affect the sensory, it would, the executive function may not function altogether normally due to those situations. It should.
Now, I have had two opportunities to observe people as they went through stages of dementia. And what I observed is that the dementia was triggered by an extreme experience. Maybe it was grief, you know, loss of a loved one. Something happened, and then suddenly that person began to lose touch with reality. So is it, it perhaps, and I'm told that every trauma, you can actually see lesions on the brain. When trauma has happened. So if someone has had a trauma, perhaps in childhood, early adulthood, whatever the case may be, and then they have a tragedy or, you know, extreme emotional response to a grief situation, you know, loss of a loved one or something, can that then be the trigger to the dementia where, you know, the brain just starts to malfunction?
Dementia is can occur at any different time. It's so associated with different things, because you can have dementia with medical conditions too, Naima, such as strokes, heart conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure. So that's one part of dementia. Also car accidents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a football player can have dementia from getting hit in the head too many times, you know. So it's different situations with that. So if you're talking about a triggered event of dementia,
I mean, just what I've observed, you know.
Well, that person had to have a diagnosis.
I mean, they were not, they didn't have a physical illness, but they had gone through grief. And that's when it wasn't sudden, it was gradual, but it seemed like that was the trigger. That's when I saw it kick off, where they started to lose touch with reality. And it was after a death had occurred in the family. And, you know, a loved one, and it's like they gradually started disconnecting with reality in their mind.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, well, you know, is dementia in a lot of ways some type of a protective measure that our conscious mind creates because we can't handle the intensity of the pain, the grief, whatever it is that we're feeling from the loss?
Well, I mean, I've known individuals that were traumatized so greatly by grief that they started dissociating, and that's what you're talking about. They started dissociating from reality and started declining mentally.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with the stress that's on the brain to deal with the heart matter.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, the brain releases that cortisol when it's under pressure.
Yeah.
And then that particular chemical starts to transform into different things, which is called, you know, stress radicals.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, transforms into something else. Everything transforms into something else.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes toxic. And that's when the brain then it starts to slow down its processing, if I can say it like that. It doesn't process normally very quickly. And it's this diagnosis called how can I express it? It's almost like when the brain just slows down, like in slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever seen a person with Parkinson's,
Yeah.
Okay, now if you notice that person's whole body is affected by Parkinson's,
yeah.
The mind, you know, and the body slows down and starts to gyrate or tremble, the nervous systems and the memory starts, okay, that's similar, but not as severe, you know what I mean? Okay, so the dementia is just when that person has problems with memory, and we call that mild cognitive impairment first. And if it goes from one stage, and if it's dementia is one of those things that is not a cure for dementia,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's associated with many things, including Alzheimer's disease. So there's not a cure for it. They could give medication to slow the progress down, but eventually it's still going to happen.
Mm.
So you were saying that you asked me a question. You think this is the way the body or the mind, you know, the way we were created to deal with, you know, whatever traumas they are?
Yeah.
Let's say no. I think, again, trauma does a lot to the human brain, and it is one of those things that we were not trained to know how to respond to. No one was, because we didn't realize the damage it did till later on in life, until people started researching it.
Yeah, and I think, like you say, the government is not equipped to protect our children from the kind of trauma that they're living with. And each of these, I mean, now they're having these school drills to prepare you for if a shooter comes in. It's nothing like a fire drill. I remember, okay, you know, we all had fire drills. Okay, if the building burns, you know, the alarm's going to go off, you're going to go out this door. You know, we got through that. That was not a traumatic experience. But the idea that you have to prepare for someone who may come in and shoot up the classroom, and this is how you have to hide under the desk, how you have to hide in the closet, that's trauma. That's traumatizing going through that drill, you know. And I'm thinking, how is that helpful to even have a child have to think, well, someone may come in here with a weapon and shoot up everything, so this is how I have to hide and listen to the screams of my classmates as they're being killed, but this is how I keep myself safe. I mean, you know. No, we have to do something better. We have to do something better. You know, and I think that if we do not change the society that produces the people who become these mass shooters, then we're going to have a generation of children that are all psychotic, because no one can live through the constant fear that they may at any moment be at the mercy of an armed attacker, and no one can protect them. That is a horrible way to raise a child.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. They don't, and the parents expect them to go to school.
Yeah.
And not realizing that they are traumatized.
Just going is traumatizing. Well, we got to take another break, but when we come back, if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. Press 1 so we know you've got nothing to say, and we can open your mic. And if you are watching us on Facebook Live, Soulful Solutions, feel free to write in your comments, and we'll share them with our listening and viewing audience. And if you're on our switchboard now and have a thought you'd like to share, press 1, and we will bring you on and get your comments. You're listening to and watching Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And we'll be right back after this break, so stay with us.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Oh, man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Is something that is the less in life that anyone can accumulate. You see, you want to be the best you can be. And being the best you can be, it has to be God's we are only. And God's we are only can keep you from stress. God's we are only will help you to overcome stress so you can live your life and be happy, be healthy, be wealthy, and be a wise man, woman, or little child, boy or girl. You know, we got a process this coming Sunday. And happy Million Man March to everybody. We're doing the 27th year anniversary celebration, 2022.
And I'm glad you brought that up because one of the things that we talked about yesterday was that riot at the Capitol and the fact that when the gathering came for all the millions of men, you know, nearly 2 million men, it was so peaceful. And the good thing about that theme was that it was about dealing with the atonement and dealing with all of the disappointment that men had caused women by not being there. I mean, it was an amazing event, and being able to address the pain that we have caused each other over time. So I'm glad that you all are acknowledging the anniversary. One thing I wanted to ask you, though, because one of the things that happened in our history was the Vietnam War, which disrupted so many families and kind of set off this chain of events of, you know, absent fathers from the homes, children growing up fatherless, the gang crime because there were no strong men in the community because of the Vietnam War had taken away all the young men. So we know the historic progression of what led to this condition of our children living fatherless homes and no protection and drug abuse and violence. We know what happened. It was triggered by that war. And you happen to be a Vietnam War veteran having to come back in America that was not appreciative of the service. So for you, in that environment in Vietnam, and I know a lot of times they use drugs to kind of numb people out, so, you know, you just kind of go and kill and not think about it and all that. But for you, what was your most traumatic memory in that environment of kill and be killed? You're there not even feeling like you're for a good cause, but you got to do it anyway, and, you know, anticipating death at any moment. What was the most traumatic memory for you that you've had to overcome over the years?
Yes, and still overcoming, you know, and you can overcome anything, you know. I got closer to God, first of all. My most trauma experience was what they call tax. Tax was truly what you said, kill or be killed. And, you know, I'm so glad that trouble don't last always. I'm so glad. I'm so glad for the female solution. You all have helped more than any doctor. You all have helped me to be myself. And I don't like to get emotional about this, but I'm a human being, too. Just like you, but I got a good message to tell the people. See, the female solution is a part of the solution for the problems that we got. See, the village is a part of the solution. It takes a village to raise, as Mama D used to say, one child, but nobody can raise a kid. See, Baby Ray Ray and She Ray and Shanae children, they my children now, because now I know what to do. See, I know that a family that prays together stays together. I'm looking at my pictures of my brothers and sisters, and if I had a hammer, see, for those that's seen and unseen, you know, acknowledged and unacknowledged, unsung heroes, I would just have a hammer, and I would hammer out love, because love is the greatest in your life. So I'm so glad that I got God in my life. God helped me to make it. The female solution helps me to make it. Now, on this Sunday, I would like for you all, everybody that's listening, to tell everybody that you know, especially the Million Man March. Let's come back together. Let's do the 8 steps of atonement. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is way on y'all. That means we are one in God, and go back to God, because God is will only will help us to solve this problem. We're going to be at Lake Grove Village this coming Sunday from 2:30 to 4:30, we will be there, and we will be able to help solve some, if not all, of our problems. From 2:30 to 4:30, Lake Grove Village is at 3515 South Cottage Grove, and we're going to have some more information. Brothers and sisters can go to the Harold Washington Foundation .info, and then you're going to see me, you're going to see Mayor Washington. We're going to be honoring the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because this is what we call Black Power. Black Power, just one moment, please. Black Power October Superstar Month. We're going to be honoring Reverend Dr. Jesse Lewis Jackson.
Atonement that you mentioned. Minister Plum, I have a question about that message of atonement that you mentioned, because a lot of people felt like that was a healing moment, you know, and when you can admit that something was wrong,
you're right,
that needs to be corrected. Because to be honest, you know, a lot of women feel traumatized as well. Women who have had to suffer with raising children by themselves, not having the men in their lives, or having men come back emotionally broken. You know, when you have,
you're right.
And we've had 5 generations of men going to war and coming back with PTSD, and a lot of them being very violent. That's where a lot of the domestic violence comes from. No one addresses that. That's where a lot of alcoholism comes from. No one addresses that.
Hallelujah.
Right. You know, God is the answer to healing the soul. But then there were some steps in atonement of, you know, addressing that, what went wrong and what needs to be made right. What about those steps that you remember that particularly touched your heart and made you feel like, this is what I need to do for my family? Because, you know, when I came back, I was not my best self. And so, you know, this thing here I need to do. What are those steps do you remember that really touched your heart?
Atonement and reconciliation. And we're going to be having the information, let me say it like this. We're promoting unity in the community. We're promoting black love. Black people have to fall back in love with themselves. You know, back in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and 60s and 70s and even the 80s, black people was all in love with each other. After the 80s, when the 90s come in, they fell out of love. So now we got a problem, and we all realize we got a problem all over the world. So this is why I'm so happy that the female solution is right on time, so we don't blow our mind, so we can come back and be ourselves. So we're going to be promoting black and black love, and information is a key to success. Education is a key to success. See, there's such a thing, and you know, name is called miseducation of the Negro. So we're going to be working on that and remembering all the brothers and sisters. You know, the Million Man March, then after that came the Million Family March, the Million More Movement, the Million Woman March. See, all of that has a connection to promote what? Who? Plump. Peace, love, unity, marketing people. Promoting what? Freedom, justice, equality, and economics. To be a part of the solution. You know, today we did and we'll do the leadership meeting today from 2 to 4 at 3515 South Cottage Grove. And we're also going to be doing atonement.
Minister Pump, one thing I want to look at, because we've had marches, we've had symbolic things done and said, but there's still pain.
May I leave my number?
Let me ask you this question before I take the next caller. Beyond the symbolic gathering and the recognitions of heroes and all of that, which is wonderful, what is the spiritual work that people need to do on the inside? You said you went through a transformation and reconnected with God, and that helped to heal you in ways that nothing else probably did. You know, you say God's will only. What were the steps that you went through as a man having that shattering experience of Vietnam, of racism in America, and all of that? What was the steps that you went through internally to help heal your soul that you would say other individuals need to go through personally themselves in order to heal their souls, in order to be able to fall back in love with themselves? What would you recommend?
I would recommend to pray. I would recommend faith. I would recommend unity in the community, black and black love, and information is a key to success. Men need to marry the women. When they get ready to marry the women, then come and see me. I'm a father, a grandfather, and a godfather, and a caretaker, because the Honorable Mayor Washington said we must pump the whole community. Now, for more information, even to get into our meeting and our service, which is private, it is 312-671-2773. See, healing, Sister Naima, equals to 23. Like the female solution, the equals to 23. So it makes you and the female solution a superstar reality, different but like Oprah Winfrey, different but like Michael Jordan and Michael Jackson. See, we're going to be honoring all of our brothers and sisters, not just these three gentlemen.
Appreciate that that recommendation for prayer, because I think that direct connection to the divine is the best thing. We got to take another call now, but we thank you so much for your wisdom that you have shared today, and we're looking forward to the event on Sunday and all the work you do, because that is the solution. Thank you so much. And let me open the mic for area code 872901. Grand Rising, introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your comments regarding handling anxiety.
Good morning, good morning. Giving honor to God today and giving honor to all of us, especially our doctor. Oh, my goodness, thank you so much, doctor, for just being alive and doing what God has put in your heart to do for us people. Thank you so much, doctor. You know, I was thinking about dementia.
Like Lois from Chicago.
I know, yes, this is Lois in Chicago. I'm sorry. Yes, this is Lois.
Right. I mean, I know your voice, but not everybody listens to my size. I want to make sure they know.
Thank you very much. I was thinking people that I've noticed with that have been diagnosed with dementia, they have a tendency to act strangely after taking medication.
Yeah.
I noticed one in particular, you know, his eyes would turn red and his attitude would change shortly after taking the medication. So I always felt that the medicines that they've been giving has, you know, some triggering to the episodes that they might have as a result of dementia. And another thing that I found is that their nutrition, most of them are hungry a lot, and they're not really getting the right, nutritious foods. And so dementia also, in the way that you're explaining it, it's so great, but that's just my personal experience with dementia. They said that my father had dementia, and I never witnessed it with him. You know, my sisters and brothers claim they saw it, what have you. He's been gone now since 2002, bless his soul. And I never witnessed anything with dementia. I mean, you know, my mother stopped him from driving. I remember that. And that was, he didn't drive for about 5 years or so. And so then when he did drive one day, mother said, James, go out there and move that car and turn that car on the other side. And she said to me, Lois, now see if he does it. And Daddy went out there and got in that car and drove that car around and turned it on the other side and came back in and gave her the keys. But he had been diagnosed with dementia, and he'd been taking insulin for about 30 years and working for the city of Chicago at the same time. So, but he never showed any signs to me of losing his mind or wetting on himself or, you know, losing control of his bowels and bladder. He was always, you know, just wanted a piano, some food, and go to church. That's all Daddy ever wanted. So thank you so much for this time, and I'm going to continue listening. So many people are listening. You're helping so many people. You really just don't even realize it. Naima, thank you so much for this. But I have one more question I want to ask before I leave. I would like to know, if we can pay our bills over the telephone, over the internet, if we can exchange monies and purchase items, what have you, over the internet, why can't we vote over the internet, over our phones? And do you feel that if we all carry, if we all have a phone and everybody's registered, that a vote would be like going to our banks? instead of going into the polling places and what have you, if we could all vote by phone?
Technology question.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very good question. And I think once we figure out how to make it cheat-proof, where people don't figure out how to, because they almost can't even figure out how to keep people from cheating when they go into the polls.
Right.
So I think once we figure out a way to ensure that people do not cheat and falsify their vote and vote more than once and all of that, then I believe that will be a thing that we evolve to. Again, it definitely makes sense because, you know, seniors can't always get out physically. And, you know, sometimes you're trying to mail in a ballot, you've got to go to the post office. So, you know, that definitely makes sense. I think more and more we're going to find ourselves doing things electronically and remotely. Now, our challenge is to not make sure we get disconnected socially so that people lose the capacity to have human contact, because a lot of people, it was hard for them even going through this COVID experience where they were isolated and people were quarantining. You know, we had a lot of incidences of domestic violence. People snapped. They couldn't stand being in the house with each other and couldn't go anywhere. So, you know, as long as we still are gathering socially in a normal way, some things, I think you're right. I think we could do electronically. So I'm sure that'll evolve in time. So thank you so much, Lois. We appreciate you as always.
Thank you. Continue
listening. Yes. You know, something she said also about dementia and medication.
Yeah.
I believe that for what modern medicine as taught in our medical schools know right now, they know how to manage the symptoms of the illness. So somebody who might have dementia is manageable when they take their medication. Of course, you know, on our show, we're always talking about healing, which is different than treatment. And I think as our knowledge expands, and the intention of our medical industry becomes to heal and not just keep treating the symptoms, which is like repeat business because, you know, the problem never goes away. You just treat it.
Mm-hmm.
Once we evolve to a point where our intention is to heal, then we will learn how to reverse the effects of dementia. Whatever the damage to the brain has been, we'll learn how to reverse that. Just like every other illness, we'll learn how to reverse the effects of it on the body so that it no longer exists, so we're not just treating the symptoms.
Absolutely. And I want to say one thing also about medication. There is a test called gene site testing, and what it is just a swab on each side of the jaw linings, and you send it into a lab, and it will let you know what medications that have, you know, that you can use to have less side effects and less adverse reactions. So if there's anyone, you know, that's on medication on the regular, you should definitely do you can Google that, GeneSight testing, GeneSight, G-E-N-E, site, S-I-N-G-T, testing. And that would really help tremendously, especially for those who are younger, people that are on medication for psychotropic issues, as well as medical issues. It doesn't matter. Because my grandson, for example, and just to let you know how sensitive the brain is to fear, fear came in. This was a really weird incident. He has a severe allergic reaction to everything, you know. Always had, you know, he can't eat this, he can't do that, eggs, whatever. We have to keep EpiPens all over the place. So that being said, he had the Corvette once, and that one time literally changed his upper respiratory system some type of way.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has this thing that he coughs. And now we have to, his mom has to give him breathing treatments.
Mm-hmm.
So, but before she gave him the breathing treatments, they put him on a medication for his lungs. And that particular medication caused anger outbursts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that, you know, because he's not an angry child. So when she didn't realize what was going on at first, she thought, like, wow, you know, what's wrong with Josiah? You know, why is he acting that way? You know what I'm saying? Because that's not like him. It's out of character. So she went and, you know, started looking at the medication, went and Googled it, and there it was.
Mm.
Adverse reaction, side effects, anger outbursts.
Well, you know, I think a lot of times when children have mood swings or reactions, and because we don't know, the first thought is, why are you acting up? You know, why are you being bad? And then they get punished when a lot of things are biochemical. And even in the classroom, and I see children a lot of times, they're going through anxiety, they're acting out. Most of the time, it's something happening at home that's upsetting. And, you know, teachers aren't trained to be psychologists, so it's kind of unfair for them to know, you know, okay, your parents are getting a divorce and you're distressed about it, and therefore you're fighting with other children. They don't know. They just know the procedures to punish you when you fight. But I think if we had more support from other institutions, other, I guess, avenues, you know, the mental health people on site, you know, to deal with misbehaving as opposed to everything being seen as disobedient. Or if a child maybe is on medication or not on medication, and they're responding to either the medication or the absence of it, you know, having more medical staff and people who can detect behavioral changes that are something other than, you know, I'm just being defiant. Because even defiance is an indication of some emotional distress for some reason. So I think if we're going to have children in schools, then we have to address all the things that affect their lives. And all the physical, psychological, you know, emotional, all of those things, and have staff that is trained and able to recognize these things so that our first response isn't always punish you for being out of order. Because that's what we've been doing. And then you said in the beginning, our children are being traumatized in these schools.
Yes. It's not just in schools, also at home, because our parents are overly emotional.
Yeah.
You know, and quick, you know, when you're overly emotional, you become very impulsive.
Yeah.
So you're not thinking about anything. You just become doing, doing everything.
Yeah.
You just, there's no thought process in emotions. You know, you're not pondering, what should I do for the best of this situation? No, you just respond based upon past data.
Yeah.
Whatever, like if a child, for example, if a child does something that you feel is wrong, you know, and you might reprimand that child, you know, prior to, and here comes this same situation again, you automatically associate it with the past event.
Yeah.
Because the brain just automatically does that instead of saying, okay, what's different about this?
Yeah.
You know, why am I seeing this cycle? What's going on?
Yeah.
Why is this cycle taking place?
Yeah.
Cycle is any dysfunction or any defective behavior that you see more than one time. So that means that something is wrong. That doesn't mean the child's just behaving on its own. Something is influencing the behavior. And so, like you said, you know, I'm so glad that we're doing the teaching, the workbook, the new earth, as we call it, you know.
Because we got to teach a different way of thinking. Yes,
so that parents can get out of their emotions. I mentor a lot of people besides just being a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, I said, if you are making decisions out of your emotions, you are in the wrong place.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
why you feel overwhelmed. That's why you feel like you're about to fall apart. That's why you feel angry, rageful, fed up, you know, giving up, because you're in your emotions. Come back to your logic center. This one, we are logical, rational thinking people when we allow ourselves to be. And, you know, again, no one taught us about the brain, Naima.
We didn't know.
You probably had biology,
chemistry.
They don't tell you anything about the subconscious?
No, they didn't. I don't know, maybe they didn't know then. Or maybe they didn't know
they should have been teaching it,
you know, whatever it is.
Well, what's the excuse now? I think that, you know, and this is maybe something we need to do after we launched this first project, is really teaching people how their brains react to their environment, to their lives.
Absolutely, they need to know.
Because they don't have a clue. They just, what it is that they're responding and reacting, but they don't understand the different shadow of perception, the brain. Why you're reacting the way you do. Why am I upset? What's causing me to keep cycling? Am I aware of myself, of me cycling the way I am? Is this normal? I mean, people don't question themselves.
Right, they don't.
All they do is just react.
Right.
So now we have a society that is fear-fixed-minded.
Fear-fixed-minded. That's it. We got to take another break. We got another call on the line also after the break. So
773-960. I got a lot to say about that.
Fear-fixed-minded. That's the state of mind. That's the state of being. And that's that's what has to change. We'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
Taxes are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me, for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Good morning. This is Akupi James.
Akupi James, how are you?
Yeah. You know, I'm making the right decisions in my life. You know, that's what I'm doing. I'm making the right decisions in my life. Go ahead. What was the question?
Yeah, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Minister Plump, because I know this is a very stressful society that we live in. What's the most traumatic experience that memory that you have that you've had to overcome over your lifetime?
Dealing with ignorant people who don't listen.
Yeah.
Still dealing with it today. I tell people this COVID is fake. You think it's real? They put that COVID stuff in your head with a Q-tip. You see, I sent you a picture of the tip. It's got nanochemicals on it. Okay, I've been telling y'all. I mean, truth sets you free. Now, and a lie, believing in a lie, keeps everybody in bondage. I'm watching my sisters degrade themselves all over internet.
Well, you know what,
I was gonna give her a solution that she needs to teach her grandson meditation and try to get that chemicals of that COVID-1 out of his system.
Meditation.
And install meditation into her family.
Okay, we're gonna talk about that, because there are a lot of people who are living in fear, and I understand what you're saying, because this
living
fear.
We're not living in fear. We're not living in fear. We're being attacked, and we see it. We're being attacked physically now. Okay? It's not going to make me feel nothing. They're not going to attack me, because I see them, because I'm looking at, you know, you look at a lion, he's not going to attack you. People don't know we're under attack. They're not going to attack me, because I'm going to attack them back. You understand? I'm ready if they want to attack me. They leave me alone, because I see them coming.
So you said you get frustrated when people don't listen. So do you have loved ones that won't listen to your advice that upset you when they – won't hear what you're saying?
Everybody's not listening. Okay? No, everybody's not listening to a common sense approach, man. Okay? I'm watching y'all act like fools out here. I watch people act like fools out here. You know? I'm telling people that this stuff is not real.
Dying from it, or have loved ones who died from it. And if you say, well, my uncle just died, my mother just died, my sister just died, how do you address that?
I have an intelligent answer, and that's one of the questions that people ask me. They go, if it's not real, how did my auntie, they said she died of COVID. I say, okay, exactly. They said, did your auntie have any preconditions? Yes, she had a heart problem. Okay, that's what she died from. They get paid $10,000 to change your death certificate to COVID. Okay?
Mm.
Google that.
And we're going to address that. And thank you for bringing that issue up, because that's been one of the biggest triggers for fear and anxiety over these last 3 years. And there are so many different statements that we're hearing. But, you know, what I see is that this condition has brought up people's underlying fear of death itself. And our absence of knowledge or belief or experience of what it means to transition out of this body keeps people in a state of fear and anxiety about death itself, about the transition process and what will happen during, like, will I suffer? And there's a fear of that, especially with something like COVID where you can't breathe. That's probably a horrible experience. People say it feels like drowning. That's awful. And then what happens if I transition? What's on the other side? You know, will I suffer there? So a lot of anxiety has been built around this period of time because of the virus, and we see a lot of responses to that. So how do we help people with extreme fear, whether it's fear of suffering, fear of death, fear of punishment after death? how do we help people with that? Because that, like you said, that's been the state that we've been in for a long time, living in constant fear, and that's affecting the brain, that's affecting the body chemistry, that's affecting our mental health.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And again, everyone looks at life from a different platform. Some people are really focused on themselves. Some people are focused just on family. Some people are focused on the outside world. But again, we have to create and eliminate a lot of the excess noise from the outside world. There's a lot of things that's going on out there that we have no control over at all. At all. So the fear of not having control over it frustrates you. It frustrates people. It, you know, it causes one to feel out of sync with themselves. And really and truly, it's, to be honest with you, it's none of your business.
Mm.
We, you know, the time it takes, Naima, for a one person to get so involved into another person's life is a lifetime.
Mm.
It's a lifetime. And, you know, we were born individually. I don't care if you had three in there with you. Everybody had their own little house, okay? They had their own umbilical cord, you know?
Yeah.
Even though they might have came from the same mother,
mm.
right? So when they came out, they all came out one by one. I never see a babies all come out at the same time.
Right.
What am I saying to you?
One by one.
We were designed to be individualists. We were designed to be independent. We were designed to allow ourselves to take care of one. You take care of yourself first. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You believe in the Creator. You believe in God, your inner, your higher power, or whatever you want to call him. All right? That's the head. You're next. And then it keeps going down. It keeps going down. In hierarchy of living, fear is one of those things that even interrupts the role. It'll interrupt your identity in life.
Yeah.
Because so many people have fear and don't even realize that fear is there because of lack of control. We have this thing called LOTUS, LOTUS, LOTUS control. That means how I control myself and how I control the external environment concerning me.
Yeah.
Okay? We can't control nothing on the outside of us. Outside is a hurricane.
Mm.
It's a little hurricane. So it's up to that individual to be the independent they were created to be, the individual they were created to be, to stay in the eye of the storm where there's peace. Because if you go into the hurricane and you're trying to figure out why people are not doing this, why, it will change the dynamics of yourself, and you get irritable, you get agitated, you get frustrated because of not being able to control the hurricane. We can't do it. It's out of our control. Even the Creator himself is looking down on the hurricane and saying, oh my goodness. I'm so serious. And I mean, you got a small amount of people. I mean, when I tell you we have billions of people walking this earth, you got a handful of people, I would say one-third, not even one-half, one-third, not even 1%, Naima.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about one-third of 1%, if that, that really understand the concepts of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
everybody
no one's perfect. We're still going to learn. We're still learning. You're going to learn from the time you come out your mother's womb to the time you go into the spiritual womb. That's just the bottom line. Getting frustrated about what people are doing, what they're not doing, and how they're doing it. Stop wasting your time on such things and enjoy your life and don't allow that fear of the non-control, okay, of the non-control to create a disconnection within yourself to start saying this is wrong and that is wrong, this is not this and that. Now you are really overwhelmed with a whole lot of stuff and don't even realize.
You know, I think that is the thing that's causing people a lot of unnecessary anxiety, feeling like you have to fix somebody else.
Yeah.
And I've had friends who, you know, You have a save the world complex. You know, every cause, they got to be there, and they're actively fighting this and fighting that and fighting that. And that will lead you into a permanent state of anxiety because you can't change people. But
well,
you can bring yourself to a state of calm. Meditation, I agree. If you are calm within yourself, it doesn't really matter what's happening outside yourself because your inner world is at peace, and that is where peace is. If you think that I can only be at peace when this person changes the way they behave, I can only be at peace when that person changes the way they behave, you will never be at peace because you cannot change other people. It's an inside job. I think that is the biggest keys to our peace of mind, our contentment, our ability to live in that state of love that will keep us in harmony and keep us adding to the harmony rather than to the distress. If we stop trying to change other people, everybody has to come to their own inner serenity, their own conclusion, their own realization. Everybody's on their own path, and it's not the same path. You got to go through what you got to go through to learn the lesson. I got to go through what I got to go through to learn the lesson. But all of us have to learn that lesson. It's an inside job.
It is.
So how do we teach our children this who are living in a world that they feel like they don't have any control over? No one listens to them because they're children. They're thrown into these horrific situations where some adult person may come and kill them, and they have to go to school and learn things and be humiliated if they haven't memorized things. So the unnatural environment that they're forced into, you go to this place called school where you're talked to rudely because that's the only way teachers have, and most of them have learned how to manage a room full of 30 different people and all of them in different moods and different states of mind and going through different problems. So the only way they know how to control the class is to be rude and insulting, to frighten you into silence so you're afraid of being humiliated. That's the only way they know to manage the class. So you have that. So you go to that very unkind, unloving environment, and then you have the reality that because it's unsafe and adults haven't figured out how to not have someone come in and kill you, so then you're always living with the anxiety that someone could come in and harm you and no one can help you, and you're living with that, and then you got to try to memorize things that don't have any relevance to your life at all, but you're supposed to memorize it, and if you don't, you'll be talked about badly and made to feel dumb and stupid, and you might have the humiliation of not passing the next grade, and then if you have punitive parents, you might be punished. I have had friends who were crying when report card came out because they got a D on something or an F on something. They're crying because they're going to get beaten when they get home. How do we expect our children to be emotionally and mentally well living that reality that we created for them?
They can't. You're creating adults with a lot of extreme stress, depression, and anxiety. That's all this. That's all that's happening. It's unfortunate because our society is based on extremes.
Yeah.
It's extremes. Very seldom do we proactively do anything. We don't even, a lot of people don't even write a list when they go in the grocery store. I got to get some groceries. You know, you have some of them, they'll go and get the coupons and they'll write down their little list.
That's my daughter. She's organized. I'm the one who is, oh, yeah, we'll just go and get stuff and then forget how to
do it. Yeah, I know I do it too, automatically.
My daughter's methodical.
We've trained ourselves to, at our wits, what is that term when you can just jump in there and have a conversation and not really understand the subject matter, but you can flow with it?
Extemporaneous? What is it called? Whatever. Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Your
brain can just jump in it. It's proactive, you know, but at the same time, it's not organized. It's just like you can just jump on in there and do it.
Yeah.
Like, I was talking to my daughter this morning. This is the first time she had to do a conference. And she was under all these lights and everything, but this is really high tech. You know, high tech when it comes to, you know, employees in the workplace dealing with logistics, IT, yada, yada, yada. This is the first time she's done it. She's like, Mom, she called me early this morning. I'm so impressed. anxiety in my chest. I said, wait a minute. Let's breathe. I said, you're not getting any oxygen.
Yeah,
that's why
your
chest
breath
is
and anxiety, yep.
Anxiety. So I said, the first thing you got to do is deep breathe. That's a deep breathe from the time you get up and the time you walk on that parking lot. Just keep breathing to get some oxygen to your brain so that the body doesn't realize that you're not in any fear or imminent threat. Because when you stop breathing and you go into emotional shock, and the brain automatically turns on the adrenaline drip, which then starts the heart to palpitate. You know, you get clammy hands. Some people get hot and frustrated, you know, all these things. I said, you got to deep breathe to get some oxygen to your brain. So when she started doing that, she started talking to me. I said, go ahead and talk to yourself. Okay, it's going to be all right. Everything is going to be fine. I'm safe. And then I'm just going to work through this. I said, go ahead and start talking yourself down.
Yeah.
So, you know, and by the time you get in front of all the lights, just get you a pivot point all the way to the back of the building. I mean, just move your eyes. You ain't got to look at nobody. Just move. They think you're looking at them, but you're not. You're then in focus, you know. I was hoping
all these
this morning, but I'm hoping that she did well. Now.
Yeah.
I know she did.
And you know,
fear is real, though.
And fear is real. And I always tell people who have to give a speech, well, if it's your speech and not something you've memorized that everybody knows if you messed up, but if it's your speech, nobody will ever know if you made an error. So you have nothing to fear. Whatever you say, as far as they're concerned, that's what you were supposed to say. So
relax. You got to know your subject matter.
Yeah.
You know, like me, I'm a subject matter specialist. So I'm like, you can throw me in anything that has to do with life, mental illness. Those are my, you know, it's just an automatic thing with me. I can add layers. I can just give you a subject.
I know.
I'm with divorce or, you know, parenting or grief and loss or, you know, it goes on and on because this is what I do.
That's what you do. And those of us who talk for a living, we don't understand people who get afraid of speaking. Like, well, why are you nervous?
I'm used to it.
But everybody's not used to it. We got to go and we got another caller on. We got about 1 minute before we wrap up. 773-436. You got 30 seconds. Make it quick. Go right ahead. Give us your wisdom. Go right ahead.
Well, and Shalom, Global Transformers, Mama D from Chicago. It all begins with like of self love. Love thy neighbor as thyself, not instead of thyself. So it's a lack of love. Most people say, I love myself, but they're killing their liver with alcohol. They are killing their lungs with smoking. So make your body a living sacrifice. When you love self and you turn your body into a temple for his spirit to dwell, it will get away from the fear. Perfect love casts out fear. It's all about fear. But if you get your love level together, and greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world, and whatsoever things are honorable, lovely, just, and et cetera, and you concentrate on those things. Love souls into shape, beginning with yourself.
I heard that. Amen. Thank you, Mama D. I love Mama D. Yes, absolutely. Wisdom with Mama D. There you go. Love yourself and take care of yourself.
Yes.
Can't do it for anybody else until you can do it for yourself. So last words, Dr. Prepare to depart.
Absolutely. I just want all to hear, you know, everyone that's in the sound of my voice, to really slow down. Slow down and process your heart. Process your mind. You know, when I say process, I mean really take the time and figure out if there's anything that you're holding deep down inside. Is there anything that you haven't dealt with? Is anything that you haven't finalized? One thing about anxiety and depression and all of these things, fear of just not having life under control, fear of not being loved, fear. Fear can only occupy your mind if you don't occupy it.
Ooh.
You make your choices. You make your choices not to allow yourself to destroy or even self-defeat, self-sabotage, self-destructive measures. But live, not exist, not survive, but live your life on your terms, because you have that thing that every human being has, the power of choice. Use it, and it will work for you.
Amen.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsanida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, medasi. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, jeret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.